All right, welcome in to Morning Invest. Coming up on today's show, the government coming for Bitcoin because it sees cryptocurrency as a threat and also a way to make money. So what in the world is the government going to do? We're going to tell you, break it all down for you. Plus, Amazon does a whole about face and apologizes for all those employees that were having to go to the bathroom in bottles. Turns out it is true, and they say we're sorry. Just they're telling them they're sorry to the wrong person, not the right people. Tell you about that. Plus, Democrats are cooling right now to Biden's infrastructure stimulus and not too happy about wanting to put some bigger taxes on big corporations. We'll tell you why Democrats are starting to falter on the stimulus. Could this be a death nail for Biden's infrastructure bill? We will talk about it. And we are joined today by the CEO of a biopharma company doing some amazing breakthrough work in the area of treating addiction. And if you want to get an inexpensive stock right now and look at what we're going to show you today, because you do not want to miss this opportunity. You do not want to miss this boat. So we'll be joined by that special guest, Timothy Koh, the CEO, a little bit later in the show. So we've got that and so much more on Morning Invest. The government can only help you so far. You need to be able to take control of your finances, and that's what we teach you to do here on the show. So, coming up on the show, we've got markets to check. Let's check those markets this morning. This is what was happening over the weekend because we had markets closed on Friday. So here's where we are this morning. Stock market is salivating for a very busy April. This is going to be one of the busiest months for trading. Bitcoin up 58,000 this morning. 10-year treasury also up. Dollar strengthening, S&P up, Dow up, NASDAQ up, Russell 2000 up. So a lot of ups. We got a lot of ups, and we're going to tell you some big stories around Bitcoin in just a moment. But I want to tell you about our friends first over at Manscaped. These guys are fantastic. Like I always say, I love a good company that has a sense of humor about them, and that's where Manscaped. They've got their new performance package. By the way, look, you know, Father's Day is coming up right now. And Manscaped is the global leader in men's below-the-waist grooming. They offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels and is now available in the United States, Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and the EU. See at the top there? It says European Special. They even have an exclusive offer for our audience. If you use the coupon code INVEST, you're going to get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com, manscaped.com. And, you know, one guy every hour is diagnosed with testicular cancer. So this is a reminder, all men listening, to check yourself, okay? Make sure you go to the doctor and check yourself. Manscaped, in addition to providing the right tools and solutions for safe and easy manscaping, has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Together, TCS and Manscaped are committed to raising awareness for the most common form of cancer in age men 15 to 35. Okay. So you want to make sure that you are supporting this company. Get 20% off right now, free shipping with the coupon code INVEST. Go to manscaped.com and use that coupon code INVEST. Get free shipping and 20% off at manscaped.com. We thank them for their support of the show. All right. Let's get to the news this morning and talk about Bitcoin because, folks, experts are starting to sound the alarm about our government intervention in cryptocurrencies. And they don't want everyone running to use an alternative form of currency, right? That's how government currencies end up collapsing. So there is a lot of fear around that this morning. We know the Japanese this morning launching their own digital currency. And so when you have the Bank of Japan, you have China all rolling out their own digital currency, which would be in their own central database. So it wouldn't be using the blockchain system like we have with Bitcoin. But the concerns are true about people with an alternative form of currency in their pockets or in their wallets, and the government doesn't have access to it. So they don't want everyone running around to like buy gold and Bitcoin. So they're doing everything in their power right now to make sure that you want to be using the US dollar instead. And a few famous prognosticators have been speaking out about this over the past few days. We featured him here on the show, Bridgewater Associates founder Ray Dalio, and The Big Short. You remember the guy from The Big Short, Michael Burry? They've all said that safe haven assets right now are not necessarily going to be safe from government intervention. And former presidential candidate Ron Paul says these assets are not safe from the government. They are coming for it. So here is Ron Paul speaking about that very issue just a short time ago.
Gold confiscation or one form or other of government intervention, because that concern is rising. We have investment greats like Ray Dalio, Michael Burry saying that safe haven assets are not necessarily going to be so safe from government intervention. They're saying expect possible tax changes or regulation that will prevent a flight of capital to these assets that could be viewed as an alternative to the dollar, like gold, like Bitcoin. Could they be at risk of a government crackdown?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what's not believable. You know, when countries go through, periods of euphoria where bubbles are blown up, a lot of times people will be taken in. But eventually everybody becomes gullible and they have to try to protect themselves. So these types of euphorias usually end. But that's the reason why, yeah, some are going to make it. Some will have their private airplanes. Some will get out of here and some will survive. At the minimum, not right now, they're benefiting from the bailouts. Nobody, the wealthy didn't get poorer in this last bailout. So it's always a threat. But the government is the threat. Because they will crack down, because they have the ability to do it. And that's why I'm so positive that we need more people saying, yes, what is this free society you talk about? Well, we had a taste of it. Our Constitution, if you don't know where to start or understand it, just start with the Constitution. You know, that might give you an idea of what a free society is all about. And they'll say, most people in Washington say, that's old fashioned. That we can't do. Nobody cares about that.
So, but Dr. Paul, what form of a crackdown do you think that this could take when we talk about assets like gold and even Bitcoin potentially being at risk of government intervention, at higher taxes, at regulation? What do you think could happen to those assets?
I think all of that can happen. The tax system will be used. But just printing money as a tax, I say all you have to do is spend money and run up the debt. That is a tax, because if people won't loan you the money, which they won't, then they have to print the money, and the devaluation of the currency becomes a tax. So the tax is going up, but they will do it for public relations reason. They will have to show that they're putting a heavy tax on the very wealthy because of the civil strife that's going on. So that will happen.
So it's going to come, and it's going to come in the form of taxes. Like, if you want to parse what he's saying there. So they're coming for your Bitcoin. They're not going to take it away, because that would be impossible. But they are going to take it away in the form of taxes. And we're already seeing that that is the case. Like, I don't know how many of you filed your taxes. And if you had Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, there is a piece, there's a box that you have to fill out on your taxes that says that, you know, if you profited from a trade. It's there. And if we're going to be using this as a way to buy things like Teslas and through PayPal and other things, or just basic groceries, you're going to be paying taxes on it now. Because that's what the federal government wants, man. They want to get their hands. They want to get their little sticky hands like Winnie the Pooh in a big pot of, honey. That's what they're going to do. So what then? Will they swoop in and take it? No, they can't really. I mean, how are they going to get access to your digital wallets, right? Especially if you've got a hardware wallet. There's no way. Right. And they can't shut down servers worldwide. That's just not going to happen. So they're going to do it the only way they can, which is through taxes. And they're going to make sure you're paying your taxes on it. Specifically, if you're making purchases, selling Bitcoin, it's a taxable event. Just listen to my brilliant friend and my accountant. He's probably the best, smartest tax accountant in the world, who says that all of these like Bitcoin billionaires that are running around with their Lamborghinis and all of this stuff, and they're, you know, using Bitcoin to buy all these sorts of assets, and they probably haven't paid taxes on it. The IRS is watching you. Take a listen to my friend Tom Wheelwright and what you need to be aware of.
Well, they say a couple of things that I think is really important. First of all, that any time you use or trade your virtual currency, that's a taxable transaction. So, I mean, let's give an example. Let's say that Bitcoin became a normal trade. You go buy groceries. When you bought groceries with Bitcoin, that would be taxable because it would be considered a trade for Bitcoin for US dollars. So every time you spend Bitcoin, every time you sell Bitcoin, that's all of that is taxable. And here's the thing. So on your tax return now, there is a box you have to check to say, did you trade Bitcoin? Well, that means, did you do anything other than just buy it? Okay, if you bought it, you don't have to mark that box, but any other use of it, you have to mark that box. If you don't mark that box, Robert, it's a felony. This is not a civil penalty. Most things on a tax return are just civil penalties, right? They're just, okay, I paid the penalty, get my wrist slapped and I go on my way. Not with this one. This is a felony. They will come after you if you don't mark that. And in fact, you should have marked it.
A felony. And by the way, the IRS is ramping up audits and looking at these things. They are going to get their hands in this money. So be forewarned, folks. Listen to my friend Tom. Listen to former presidential candidate Ron Paul, who accurately predicted the last collapse that we went through, and no one listened to him. Listen to Ray Dalio. Listen to Michael Burry. You know, what can we do to protect ourselves? You know, if you're using and investing in alternative forms of currency, you know, the idea is that if you want to hold it, that's what I do. So you're holding it. Or if you are making these trades and you're converting it to different types of currency, making sure that you're protected and you're actually accurate on your taxes. You know, do not lie about these things. Don't forget that you will have to pay taxes on these tradable events. So be very careful. And I think, you know, that's the thing that people don't talk about. You want to go buy a Tesla with Bitcoin, that's fine. You're getting, you're selling that to somebody else, and that is a taxable event both ways, as Tom points out.
Trust me, they are coming after, I mean, us, because I've done very well with Bitcoin and Ethereum, but Tom knows my tax strategy. I buy, but I never sell. And if I paid somebody in Bitcoin, what would happen then, Tom?
That would be taxable. So if you paid him,
the person I pay,
it'd be taxable both for you and for the person you pay. That's right.
So as long as I'm buying my Bitcoin after I've paid all the taxes, which I don't pay anyway, and I store the Bitcoin into my...
your digital wallet, you're keeping there as an asset like you would with gold. But then if you're using it to go buy cars and fancy stuff like that, that's when the IRS will get you. And so this is the first step in what we're going to see from the federal government on cryptocurrency. Let's talk about debt and deficits now and the stimulus. We woke up with this headline this morning, and not surprising to hear from Democrats. Some Democrats are cooling to Biden's plan to boost the corporate tax rate. Not surprising at all. You know, this is where we get to see whether or not Democrats are just, you know, they pretend to be progressive rather than actually progressive. They talk about wanting to tax wealthy corporations, making them pay their fair share when the average American isn't paying way higher in taxes. And now we're seeing a number of Democrats quietly saying, you know, we don't like the idea of having to raise taxes on corporations. Maybe we should raise gas taxes instead. Because who's that going to affect? Let's raise gas taxes on you. Then that's where it hits the average American. Take a look. I mean, this is exactly what, you know, like Bernie Sanders not happy with this news. When you buy a Nike Air Max sneaker, $150. Dish Network Basic Package, $64.99. FedEx Large Box Delivery, $20. Zoom Pro Monthly Membership, $14.99. Federal income taxes paid in 2020? Nike, zero. Dish Network, zero. FedEx, zero. Zoom, zero. Yes, we must end our rigged tax code. But folks, this could be a huge problem for getting this infrastructure plan through. If we don't have a way to pay for it, and if Democrats can't come to the table and agree that we need to increase the corporate tax rate from 23 up to 28%, still below where it was under President Trump, then this whole infrastructure package could be ballooned. And not to mention the fact that the next stimulus package that we've been talking about, which would be the second phase, which we probably wouldn't have announced until, you know, later in July, et cetera. after this first one passes. So here's, and you know, Chris Wallace this weekend thought did a good job pushing Missouri Senator Roy Blunt on this issue, you know, because there's a whole bunch of hypocrisy now floating around from Republicans, right, on debt deficits, and we can't spend this, we can't. So here's Roy Blunt getting pushed into a corner by Chris Wallace on this question of debt and our debt ceiling.
3.5% unemployment rate we had a year ago when COVID started.
But let me push back on what I think would be the White House argument. They would say, look, we're talking about raising the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%. When President Trump came in, it was 35%. So it's still a tax cut from where it was in 2017. And instead, Senator Blunt and the Republicans are saying, instead of raising taxes for big corporations, well, let's tell the average person, the working class person, you're going to have to pay more for taxes. If you drive more on the road, you're going to have to pay more in a mileage fee, or you're going to have to pay more in tolls. They're going to say they're protecting the fat cats and putting it on the backs of the working class.
Well, I think people have always accepted the user tax concept of the transportation system, and on the tax bill itself. You know, the proof we're in the numbers. We saw the economy growing in a dynamic and dramatic way. We saw businesses thinking about how they could restructure themselves back into American corporations with a more strong basis in this country and the supply chain. All those things were happening. We had a 3.5% unemployment rate as we were a couple of years into that tax package. And remember, the corporate rate we did just got us in the mid-level of the corporate rate for the countries around the world. If we went back to 28%, we'd be, I think, number two in the world in corporate taxes. Other countries saw the success we were having, and many other countries that we compete with reduced their corporate rate to try to keep their jobs at home rather than seeing those jobs come to the United States of America.
So, oh, we'd be number two, right? Well, we're not number one in anything except war, right? So imagine, well, we're number two on this list for corporate taxes. Remember what it was in the 1950s, right? 70%. And now, individuals, you are paying a higher tax than these corporations. Again, Warren Buffett famously talking about his secretary paying higher taxes than he does. All of these loopholes and all of this, you know, that's how they're able to get away with this. Zero, zero, zero. Nike, zero. Dish Network, zero. Amazon, zero. How is that possible? And Democrats are cooling to the idea of increasing the corporate tax rate? Oh, like a gasoline levy. Yeah, let's do that on average Americans. How about a gasoline levy? Chris, though, pushes further on this point.
Senator, I got less than 2 minutes left. I want to squeeze one more question in. I haven't heard you say it today, but some of your colleagues in the Republican Party are complaining about this is going to explode debt, this is going to explode deficits. And I want to put up what the Republican record is on those. During the Trump presidency, even before the pandemic, the national debt increased by more than $3 trillion. And in 2017, every Republican in the Senate, including you, voted for the big Trump tax cuts, which cut revenue by almost $1.5 trillion. So I guess the question is, when I hear, for instance, Mitch McConnell talking now about, well, debt and deficits, hasn't the Republican Party, haven't you lost your credibility on this issue?
Ouch.
Well, I don't think anybody has a very good record for the last decade on this. I think the deficit under the Obama years and the Trump years are very similar. The tax cuts, however, in real revenue produced more revenue, and static revenue they wouldn't, because you couldn't anticipate the kind of growth we had. And remember, after the pandemic did occur, we did five. Not one, not two, not three, not four, but five bipartisan bills trying to be sure we stabilize this economy so we'd have a stable economy that would pay that dead off as we came out of COVID. Now we've seen one incredibly partisan bill from the new administration, followed by what it appears to be will be another incredibly partisan bill. You can't spread that blame around if you decide you're going to do it all by yourself.
Well, that's the best way to, that's a good laugh. Thank you for your pile of hot air. Thank you, Senator Blunt. Good that, you know, he's retiring, by the way. But so we'll, how are we going to pay for this? A consumption gas tax? A mileage tax on gas? Like that's what these moderate Democrats want? That's what these middle of the road Democrats, who might as well be Republicans, by the way. Kirsten Sinema. I had a viewer correct me on that. Said, I know you say her name all the time. You say it's Kirsten. My apologies, Kirsten. You could do a little curtsy. Kirsten Sinema of Arizona. Thank you. And so that, Senator Joe Manchin.
So that does mean they're considering Buttigieg's plan?
I mean, that's where Democrats are right now. They're saying we don't want to be able to go back to our constituents right now. And all they're worried about is reelection and raising corporate taxes. These corporate donors that are going to fund their reelection campaigns, they're not happy about it. So should we go the Pete Buttigieg route, maybe going with this consumption, maybe going with the gas tax? We don't know. I don't know how this is all going to come together. They need to figure out something, and they need to figure it out fast. But I love the hypocrisy on the Republican side, which is like, you know, the debt and deficits. We just can't afford this. Absolutely can't. But it's okay when it's under Trump. It's okay. And also when we run up massive military defense budgets, that's okay. Look, you know, it's like, don't look over here, but look over there. Like the sleight of hand. Again. And by the way, these companies wouldn't even talk to Bernie Sanders when he wanted to call them in front of his committee. And at the same time, when you've got these big pharmaceutical companies raking in trillions of dollars in profits, and they're raising cost of drugs during a pandemic, 500 top drugs being raised, 500 prescription drugs in the middle of a global pandemic, Robert Reich says, maybe I'm just a radical lefty, but I think that something is wrong with a country that sits back and allows filthy rich drug companies to raise the prices on 500 prescription drugs in the middle of a global pandemic. What do you think about that? Drop me a comment below. I want to tell you about our next sponsor. We've got a special guest coming up here in just a moment. Hear that from a CEO of a biopharma company who's been doing some amazing work in the area of addiction. My family personally, I heard from somebody who wrote me and said my family member had schizophrenia as well. And I lost an uncle to that a number of years ago. And so these types of biopharmaceuticals that could actually treat these types of addictions and prevent this kind of thing, and for us to be able to invest in these types of companies at an undervalued price, stick around for that in a second. We'll get there in a second. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Truebill. Because did you know the average American can save $720 a year just for working with Truebill? Because so many people have these subscriptions that they've totally forgotten about. Are you one of them? Like, do you keep track of all your bill payments and budgets? The new year, right? We're in this new quarter, it's spring. It's time to take stock of your finances. Take a look at your spending habits. Truebill is the smartest way to manage your finances. They have a very easy to use app when you sign in, and it keeps track of all your recurring charges in one place. And they let you cancel subscriptions directly through the app. Like, oh, you're not reading that newspaper, digital newspaper anymore? Delete, cancel right there. It's easy to identify fraudulent activity. They have bank level security. And people think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions, but they actually spend closer to $200 a month. $200 a month. Truebill has saved its users more than $50 million. So the average person saves $720 per year with Truebill. Get started today by going to Truebill.com/invest. Take control of your finances. Start saving at Truebill.com/invest. That's Truebill.com/invest. So, my thanks to Truebill for supporting the show. Now, let's check in and connect with Timothy Koh, the CEO, on this special interview. Take a listen.
I'm super excited about this next segment. You know, for some context here and some history, back in 2018, the FDA made a huge announcement, which changed the world of science, medicine, psychedelics forever. So what happened was, since then, since in that space, entrepreneurs have realized there's immense potential of commercializing the uses of these amazing substances in order to cure many ailments that hurt millions of people around the world. In fact, you know, I don't talk about this often, but we had a history of mental illness in our family. Perhaps these types of medicines, these types of cures could have helped our family years ago. With us today is Mr. Timothy Koh, who is CEO of Entheon Biomedical, a pioneer in this space. He's made a name for himself by seeing where the puck is going and then getting his company there fast, beating the competition. So welcome to the show, Timothy. Thanks for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So Tim, I'll just give you some context here. Back in 2020, you know, our channel focused on a lot in the inefficiencies of government. I mean, that's no secret. And the costs of the lockdowns on mental health, we write about it in our newsletter on a constant basis, weight gain, mental health problems. We're also concentrating on stimulus and reopening and getting this economy back up and running again. So your personal story with regards to what the modern world can do to a person in this current context ended in a family tragedy. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but would you mind sharing that story so our audience might gain some value and insight into this and what this history looks like for you?
Certainly, yeah. Actually, you know, 2 days ago marked the 2-year anniversary of the loss of my brother. I lost my brother to a fentanyl overdose. And it's just so crazy to think of, you know, fentanyl overdose as being such a commonly understood source of death for, you know, so many across North America and the world. But, you know, before it ever got to that point where my brother, you know, fed into this massively expanding statistic, over the course of about 2 decades, my brother was a substance use disorder sufferer. And it didn't happen overnight. And during that 20-year period, there were hundreds of thousands of dollars spent over a course of, you know, 7 or 8 different residential treatment centers. My brother was institutionalized, put on every known medicine that was applied for addiction issues. He was put on methadone, suboxone, antidepressants, antipsychotics, anxiolytics, as well as, you know, seeing dozens, if not hundreds of mental health professionals, psychotherapists, psychiatrists, psychologists. Everyone working super earnestly to try to drive at some sort of, you know, relief. But ultimately, the conventional methods of treatment are, you know, woefully inequipped to deal with some of the trauma related issues that so many addiction sufferers, you know, face on a day to day basis. And so over the course of that 20 years, there was a pretty steady descent into worse and worse addictions, even though we were deploying all the funds, medications, etc. And so, yeah, sadly, we lost him 2 years ago. And so that's, you know, that's my story. It's a tragic one. And it's very, you know, it's very difficult to experience and witness. I love my brother dearly. And the reality is, you know, we sometimes look at these statistics, these massive death statistics, but we don't really take into account the true human suffering that precedes that. Often decades, often so many sleepless nights, a sense of, you know, anxiety and dread that accompanies the families throughout the whole, you know, course of that person being in addiction. And so, you know, we're ultimately trying to address that using the power of psychedelics to elicit that transformational, you know, retrospective sort of foundational reordering of what constitutes a person's belief systems so that new behaviors can come from that. And so that's what we're focused on.
So when you went through that, I mean, was that the catalyst for you, that experience? I mean, it had to have been that shaped where you are now, your life, your company.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually became responsible for my brother's care about 4 years ago. My parents were just incapable. They're, you know, in their 60s and 70s, and they just didn't know what to do. They didn't know what was helpful or harmful in terms of support. So I actually took the driver's seat in terms of my brother's care. And saw him through, you know, 3 different treatment centers, saw him living on the street, getting him into other treatment centers. And through that whole process, about 2 years of really dedicated support, I witnessed, like, it was a case study in the limitations of, you know, the current conventional mental health treatments for addiction. Again, dozens, if not hundreds of therapists, doctors, mental health professionals in that time, all really, you know, pulling out their hair saying, we wish we could do more.
You saw like a total breakdown. I'm just curious, like, what were there like some common themes like you saw emerging, like that they just couldn't treat him?
Yeah, no. And the reality often, like, you know, I walked the ward floors in some of the places that my brother was in. And some, you know, the conventional approaches all do try to peel back layers of the individual and get them to really understand what's driving their addictive behavior, whether it's resentments, a sense of shame. But the reality is that for some people that are really trauma laden, like my brother has trauma, and, you know, to some extent, so do I. We grew up in the same household. Some of those elements of a person's memory or narrative are so difficult to access that the attempts to, you know, dive into that stuff by way of, you know, therapies, talk therapies, psychotherapies, often result in a sort of traumatic reenactment where a person can shut down and dissociate, as is often the case. And that's why we see so much, you know, I guess, lack of remission, that a lot of these attempts at, you know, building a layer of stability and then diving deeper into that person are ineffective for those that suffer from, you know, traumas that are related to their lives and that are associated with their addiction.
You know, one thing that's
there was a dissent, sorry to cut you off, like, yeah, as these people tried to, you know, dedicate more time and attention to my brother's problems, my brother actually descended further into the state of dissociation, to the extent that from a psychiatric perspective, he, you know, suffered from insomnia for the better part of 9 months, and was, you know, effectively non-communicative for a good period of that time. So it's very difficult to witness. And, you know, as the physicians and psychiatrists tried to delve deeper, he would recede further.
Awful. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear this. And anyone who's, you know, our audience, I hear from our audience constantly with family members who've suffered from addiction, who've been there. And so, you know, I lived in West Bluefield, West Virginia, and I covered the opioid epidemic. I witnessed people on OxyContin, and to see it just ravage communities, and, you know, health professionals just scratching their heads and not sure what to do. And now we've got this pandemic on top of it, which has proven the importance of these breakthrough medicines and entrepreneurship. We've seen incredible entrepreneurs emerge as a result of this. So I personally have very much respect for companies in the medical sphere that are doing the work, like what you guys are doing. So do you see the governments with their stimulus packages and their incentives wanting to see people's mental health and wellness get better? Or are we kind of trying to keep people in a perpetual state of relying on something, a system that's broken?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one to answer. I think the stimulus is necessary. The reality is that, you know, in light of through the lens of viewing what's happening globally and within North America, from the perspective of mental health, you know, so much of what underpins those addictive behaviors are related to, you know, the general composition of mental health. And some part of that is a sense of purpose and meaning, as well as the social fabric that keeps a person affirmed and in a state of, hey, I'm attached to this world and I'm a stakeholder within a larger social fabric. And so in terms of stimulus, I think it is life support to some extent. Ultimately, I do think there is an inherent danger to depriving people of that sense of purpose. You know, you shut down economies, you deprive, you know, people do get a sense of purpose from what they do in life vocationally, but also limiting their ability to, you know, mirror their own humanity. I think that's a pretty troubling thing. And so not just from a speculative perspective, but I think we've seen a massive boom or a massive uptick in terms of people that are self-reporting anxiety, depression, suicidality. And I think there's a cresting wave of drug addiction that's, you know, as of yet hidden and not well reported, but there's a lot of people suffering. And I think, you know, I guess statistically within Vancouver, where I live, over the course of the pandemic, you know, we lost more people month on month to drug overdoses than we did COVID-19. And so I think it's quite telling as to the true extent of the sort of hidden epidemic that is mental health, you know, related illness as a result of these lockdowns.
Well, I want to hear what you guys are doing at your company. I mean, this is remarkable. I mean, you're the CEO of a publicly traded company that I highlighted yesterday in our special video. And look, there's actually much more in-depth information and we put together over there. So go to portfoliowealthglobal.com/Clayton. It's on the screen right now. You can grab that and you can download, you can learn amazing things about your industry and the business. And for those of you who are watching who didn't understand this, now you can be educated about it and you can be a you can really get involved in this. So you guys are a first mover in DMT. And Entheon Biomedical is also in this disruptive predictive biomarker sector, both of which are very important. And since the Biden administration encourages deregulation of these, which is great, and the FDA has labeled this breakthrough therapy, how do you guys come in? How do you guys fit into that space?
Totally. You know, from the molecules perspective, we've seen so much advancement in terms of psychedelics, classic psychedelics, proving useful for treating people with mental health and addiction related issues. Psilocybin is an amazing molecule. It's, you know, it's in later stage trials with regard to treatment resistant depression, as well as major depressive disorder. And there's some early trials that are indicating it's useful in smoking cessation. Wow. And so I have very little wrong or very little bad to say about psilocybin, but the position that I take is that, you know, psilocybin is amazing. It can create these transformational experiences by way of working on a certain receptor type, you know, that regulates serotonin within the brain. But from a commercial perspective, there are certain limitations. Ultimately, psilocybin, which can create this transformation, the time engagement is roughly 4 to 8 hours, during which time, you know, typically two monitors need to be there, a physician and a nurse, ensuring that that person is in a safe and tolerable sort of experience range. So in terms of commercial viability, as well as patient access, that throughput limitation that's put on by that long time of engagement really does hamper to some extent, you know, how many people a physician could see on a daily basis. And during that time too, there's also consideration for safety. Ultimately, psilocybin, LSD, ayahuasca, DMT are massively profound. For most people, this is a area of thought that is entirely novel to them. They'll see things, they'll remember things that are inherently very powerful and sometimes distressing. And right now there are no suitable interventions. If someone enters into a negative space, a traumatic space or distressing space, there's no way for that person to come down from that experience. That person, I liken it to a solid fuel rocket. Once you light the fuse, you're going for as long as the rocket has fuel. DMT, on the other hand, is very powerful and it creates a lot of the same effects. You know, it works on the default mode network, not to go too much into that, but ultimately creates the same entropy and disruption that psilocybin does, but it is very short acting. It has an active you know, window of experience of about 15 minutes. And so for us, because we're administering this intravenously, we have the ability to create these shorter, powerful experiences. But then during that time, if someone says, hey, doctor, this is way too much, I'm actually quite scared, we have the ability to stop that experience and that person will return to a functional baseline. I mean, like cognitive, like you can drive a car, I wouldn't advise it, but return to a functional baseline in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Wow.
Thereby reducing the risk of having these distressing, potentially traumatic experiences. And so with that, you know, we have the ability to curtail some of those safety concerns that are attributed to that longer form engagement, but also we have the ability to create a more dynamic and customizable therapy style where we can have, instead of one long form therapy, potentially multiple small form therapies with, you know, psychotherapy in between. And it gives us the ability to, or gives the physician the ability to potentially see more patients per day and create higher revenue opportunities for them. So higher revenue and increased safety. We think that's something that physicians will ultimately favor.
Yeah, it's a win. It's a win-win because as you point out, even on your website, when it comes to treating addiction, the rate of success is so low that we've been just conditioned to accept and then, as you say, even expect failure. So like the fact that we could see more patients, help them, return them to a baseline and get them back functioning in society, it seems like an actual, you know, a shocking breakthrough.
Absolutely. It's it is an entirely disruptive sort of opportunity within the mental health space. you know, within that already established drug treatment paradigm, there's a, you know, a really well-established high price point that comes implicitly with an understanding that, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 may not elicit success from a sort of long-term viewpoint. It's quite typical for most addicts before they succumb to death for them to be rendered treatment resistant. And in the case of my family, we spent, you know, $30,000, $40,000 per treatment stay, knowing that it might not have success, knowing that the likelihood of it being, you know, the thing that fixed it was quite low, but being so desperate that we said, we've got to try. If we have money to spend, we will. And the reality is that, you know, that is an expectation within the drug treatment space that the interventions are costly and ineffective. And so DMT has the ability to, or the opportunity to radically disrupt that. And from a costing perspective, we think that we can come in far under some of that, some of those well-established high price points and be very profitable, but also provide greater access due to that lower price point.
That's fantastic. And as you know, and as my audience knows, I am very bullish on this company and I'm honored to be featuring you here on the show. And the company shares right now are also at their lowest point in months, looking at it right now. So that's exciting. That's a huge opportunity. So what are the most important next value added steps for you guys? Where are you taking things?
Totally. Yeah, so we're still in the early innings. I think that's the reality about the psychedelic space. So a lot of our development is predicated on the successful advancement of our DMT trials. We have a very strong literature basis to presume safety and efficacy, but of course we're moving first from the foundation of safety. So we have a clinical trial plan for Q4 and Q1 of this year and next to really, you know, provide that robust basis of safety that regulators require us to provide. But the other direction that we're going in is still in service of our duty of care to people that are taking that brave step of seeking help. Ultimately, I think you need to really honor that willingness. You know, people often suffer in silence and sort of repress their need for help. And those people that are brave enough to get that help, I think it's really important for us as an industry to make best use of that opportunity. And so one of the things that we're concerning ourselves with is ensuring that patients get the right medicines that are sort of suited to them. And so we've recently acquired a company called Halogen Life Sciences in the genetic space. And that's a sort of starting pillar of an approach that we're taking, not only to benefit our own internal development, but also to provide the tools that the industry needs to, you know, provide better, more personalized and safe care to individuals that are brave enough to ask for it. And so what we're doing is we're taking a genetics and neurology perspective in terms of assessing patients to ensure that first, it's safe that they take certain psychedelics, and then personalizing it based on more than just subjective tellings of what they're going through, but looking at it from the perspective of genetics, as well as EEG monitored snapshot of a person's lived reality. And so we have a genetic test kit that's gonna be coming out very soon, expect a news release around that soon, that will indicate whether a person has risk factors for things like psychosis, schizophrenia, as well as indicators whether they'll have a strong or a weak response to something like ketamine, psilocybin, or DMT. Ultimately, we want to provide the safety standards and tools that individuals and physicians will use prior to prescribing any psychedelic, because it is such a brave and profound experience, ensuring that people that are willing to take that step have the strongest foundation of safety and personalization that they can to make sure that the medicine that they're going to receive is suited for them. And so we're very proud to be announcing that soon and announcing further developments, ultimately to arm the evolution of the psychedelic space with safety tools. Because ultimately, over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, a whole bunch of molecules are going to come online, whether it's psilocybin, MDMA, to accompany ketamine. And ultimately, doctors are going to be faced with a difficult and quite profound prescribing choice about, you know, ketamine and psilocybin are already targeted at the same disorder, which is depression. And ultimately, these are very powerful experiences. And so we want to get it right the first time and not suffer the same, I guess, failures that traditional SSRIs and SNRIs have faced, where someone that's seeking help will sometimes go through ineffective treatments over the course of many years and, you know, become beat down because, you know, no remedy is readily available. And so taking that genetics perspective to cancel out what might be harmful and taking the EEG perspective to really understand what sort of additional treatments and how best to serve that person, we want to provide that diagnostic basis to service not only us, but the rest of the industry as it evolves.
That's fantastic. And Timothy, I'm just sitting here thinking, I mean, as you're saying this and just thinking about my uncle who passed away, you know, and I learned as a child that he had schizophrenia and learning like that he ended up, you know, taking his own life. And you know, if your company existed at that time and the breakthroughs that you're seeing now, I mean, it could have frankly saved his life. So thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for, bringing this to our attention and to my audience. I really appreciate you joining us. Thank you, Timothy, for coming on the show.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to Timothy for joining us on the show. And I have to say, you know, just looking in the chat right now and seeing Betty saying, you know, this is amazing. I'm hoping that, you know, I live with bipolar. Wonder if this could help me. And so many people who are suffering from addiction and have been, you know, some people dealing with all of these manner of problems that they've had to face over the past number of years. This could be really on the forefront. So check them out again. We had that link on the screen and go there and check out and learn more. We've got more news to get to. I want to get to this story because Amazon, we've been covering, of course, the Amazon story here over the past few weeks where we saw them come out and try to, you know, say that we have no workers going to the bathroom in bottles. That's not something that our company does. We do not. We take care of our workers. We're very progressive. Well, now they've come out with an apology and they're admitting, yes, that some of their drivers have to go to the bathroom in bottles. But what about the warehouse employees that end up having to do it too? So they came out and apologized basically. And the way they did it was the way they apologized to the representative. Representative Mark Pocan, who was the one who called them out about this originally, if you'll remember, and they released this statement, and our recent response to Representative Pocan, and they said basically we were wrong to do that. We should not have sent out that tweet to Representative Pocan, and he says, "Sigh, this is not about me. This is about your workers who you don't treat with enough respect or dignity. Start by acknowledging the inadequate working conditions you've created for all of your workers, then fix that for everyone, and finally, let them unionize without interference." Yes. Wouldn't it be nice? They had their union vote. We're still awaiting the results of that vote. It's like, what's going to happen? Will this Alabama Amazon facility be able to unionize? It would send shockwaves across the United States if this happens. So we will bring that to you when we have it. So that is the news on this Monday, my friends. Again, checking the markets here with Bitcoin up to $58. And looking at NASDAQ as the market opens. S&P up as well. And a bunch of other altcoins up as well. So that is all the news. Please be sure to subscribe to the channel and turn on that little bell notification. We are live every morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time here, helping you build wealth, helping you navigate this corrupt government banking system so you can keep more of your own money in your pocket. All right, I wanted to open up for some super chats here. And by the way, I should mention, coming up in about 12 minutes, we have a premiere video. So when you're watching this stream, what's going to happen is it'll automatically, as soon as we end this stream, it should automatically trip over to our brand new premiere video on a company that I'm really bullish about. So you don't want to miss that. It's a company that I'm investing in right now and really excited about. And it's in the cryptocurrency space, blockchain space. So you're going to want to stick around for that. That's in just a few minutes. I think a lot of you got alerts for that, by the way. So we'll be there. All right, my friend, I think we got some super chats we can blast through here.
We got 10 new members as well. Mike Luongo, super chat. Christina Ellis, $10. April is Autism Awareness Month. Accept, understand, love autism where every day is different, but don't you dare change the routine. Love my Austin Autism Warrior. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you for that.
James Darling and Jeff Francis, new members. Anthony Garman, how long does E-Trade make deposits available for trading?
How long until they do? I think when I opened my E-Trade account, it took I think 2 or 3 business days is usually what it takes. For the reason that I use E-Trade is for OTC stocks. So primarily Webull is my platform of choice. So that's where all I do most of my trading. But E-Trade I use for buying some of those over the counter stocks, like what Entheon, for crying out loud. We just had them on, right? So you can use E-Trade or TD Ameritrade. Usually it takes a few days, but their stock is totally undervalued right now, Entheon.
And then we got Anthony Taft, Andy Diandian, James Darling, new members, welcome. And then Anthony Taft, can you show my dog Turkey? She's so cute. I have a video to, if you are able to show videos, I just need to know where to send it. We actually don't do videos, but...
Yeah, I mean, what you could do is, though, you could put it up on YouTube and send me the link.
That's much easier.
Just upload it to YouTube and send us the link. Yeah, it's much easier. And then we could share the link. You think about that. So you could just send me a link, just clayton@morninginvest.com. Or actually send it to the pets line, pets@morninginvest.com.
And then Josie Yesmut, Super Chat, thank you. Elf Fine, new member. Andrew Martin just bought 450 shares in Entheon.
Entheon. Oh, sweet. Yeah, it's a, you need to do it on, it's an OTC stock. So you need to do it on, like one of the other brokerages like E-Trade or, Fidelity or TD Ameritrade. So I personally use E-Trade. That's where I invest.
We got Jay Freeze Boston, new member. Natalie Chavez, I did DMT in Costa Rica.
How was it?
I mean, if you're going to do it, that'd be a pretty good place.
Yeah.
We have Katie Marshall and Celine Shalane Miner, new members. Welcome. Rumpel Gold, my friend's son just died from a heroin overdose. Fentanyl was found in the heroin, but mixed with alcohol. He died. He was 23.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know, when I do a story like this, I think, okay, you know, how many of you are affected by this? How many of you can relate to this? And just, I was watching the chat and just overwhelmingly, people are like, yeah, this is real in my life. I deal with this every day. Like Martha saying, I'm on morphine for so many back problems. You know, just, it's really difficult. I'm sorry to hear that, Rumpel.
Marvina Simpson, how do we get involved with Entheon Biomedical via Webull? I can't seem to find it.
Yeah, so Marvina, that was just saying, you got to use, because that's a smaller OTC stock, you're going to have to go to a different exchange. And I have a full video here on my channel about that company. So the stock ticker is in there. That stock symbol is in there. But I would use like E-Trade. That's what I use. Very easy to set up. Just go to etrade.com, set up very quickly. You'll need to make a deposit from your bank in there. So if you put a few hundred dollars in or whatever you do. But I personally like E-Trade. It's just very easy to set up.
Kristen just said, I love how real this show is. Even as hard as some topics are, we all have a place here with 3 hearts.
Thank you. Thank you, Kristen.
Then Timothy Madsen.
By the way,
go ahead.
But let me just say, sorry, Kristen, I was going to send you a long email, but I said, no, I'll just talk to you on the show live. So Kristen sent me a really kind email, very sweet, and she's taken it to the next level with her website. I'll share it, not now. I know you're still under construction with it, but I went through, I saw all the different designs, and I love the look of the website. I was going to say, you should look into the story brand process. Check out Donald Miller's great book on story brand. I went through that process with my company a number of years ago. So at Morris Invest, to figure out like, how can I connect with an audience
What's my message of my company? Like, what's the reason when I land on that landing page? I think you'll find his book tremendous because it kind of takes you through figuring out who your avatar is, who you're talking to. But I love the website. I can't wait to see it come together. And again, well, once it's ready for prime time, I'll mention it here on the show.
Kristen's even lurking over on my side. I'm going to make a content creator out of her. She's going to be creating more content. And then also, Donald Miller is one of my clients. I did his studio and he gave me a bunch of his stuff. And yeah, he's really good. I like his books.
He's excellent. His story brand process like changed my whole company. I flew to Nashville. I went through 3-day training with him a number of years ago and really got clear and clarity on who we were talking to. And you know, a lot of people start their companies. They put like, my father founded this company 30 years ago. It's like, no one cares. They care about what you can do for them. You know, like who cares about your grandfather built this? No one cares. They're there to get, you know, buy your product or service. Like, how can you help them and guide them on a journey? So that's awesome. And I was thinking about that too, Chris. And I was like, you know, content creation. Like, I would love to see like the behind the scenes of how you're making these different products and, you know, talking about different ways how to dress them up, like what's the best way to wear these with different things. And you could do a whole channel around that with your website as the CTA, and so people can learn and more and
oh, she will there. she's yeah.
Good.
MazTech Gaming, my son is autistic. The most frustrating part of autism is that people look at it as a disability. It's not. I wouldn't change him if I could.
Oh.
Roberta Zakreski, my son used psilocybin. Yeah, psilocybin. Is that different than, okay, years ago, and it totally cured his depression and mania. He's going to be happy to hear about this.
That's awesome, Roberta. Way to go.
Zenith Star, my bank is not supported by Webull. What platform do you suggest using that supports Chime?
How do I get? I mean, you know, you could just use any of the main banks if you want, just to get money in and out of that account. I mean, you can set up a bank account in no time now these days. I would go over to nerdwallet.com and just check for like best online banking solutions. Chime is going to be rated number one. That's what I use, but. Look for another one. You could even just use a big one like a Wells Fargo or something like that that'll work with one of those.
Well, and that's
Chase Bank.
Yeah, that's what I do. I have a Chase account just because I move so much money business-wise, and Chase is just more reliable as far as the business stuff goes. So I have that, but then my money I keep in, you know, something like Chime so that I kind of have it in two different places. I don't like having it all in one place.
Yeah.
Karma Martinez, new member, and then Natalie Chavez. I did ayahuasca in Costa Rica, and it was mind-blowing. I realized I never spoke kindly to myself and how I am. All I have, and with me, I am nothing. I respect myself much more now.
Wow. That seems interesting. I would love to try ayahuasca.
Yeah. I had a peyote experience. That was life-changing.
Wow.
And that's all the Super Chats.
Oh, we got one more. Hope. Oh. Did Hope just send one in?
Oh, Hope.
I can't see it on my screen for some reason. Oh, new member. Hope. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for becoming a new member. Remember, we do this show live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern time, so please subscribe if you're not already a subscriber. How many new folks do we have here? Can you just say hello? Oh, I guess you can't because you're not a member. You have to be a member. Become a channel member. But, yeah, just subscribe because we're together Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're bringing you investment news and business news that's outside of the corrupt government Wall Street system. You know, that's what I want to do here is empower you, educate you around your finances.